Accession number 9968, Reel 1.
Mr. Smith, Reel 1. How did you come to be in the army, Mr. Smith?
Actually, I was an apprentice in the engineering, but I'd always wanted to be in the armed forces, and when everyone, of course, had to register whether you were deferred or not. So I tried at 19 and a half and they wouldn't take me. And at 20 I had to register, so I told them I was an engineer's labourer.
When was this?
In May 1940.
And can you remember what your initial training was like?
Yes, I can. It was very much... it was all infantry. All infantry work. Tons of marching, tons of crawling through the grass and the usual thing for infantry, you know. That was what we got mainly. And we got 3 months of that. And then after about 10 weeks, I think it was, we were sorted out and I was given an unpaid Lance Corporal's stripe. And all the unpaid one-tape Lance Corporals were into one platoon with a major in charge of them instead of a sergeant. And when the 12 weeks were up, we were told in the one stripe platoon that if you cared, you could pick your own battalion. There were about 3 battalions going. 2 were territorial and 1 was regular. And I was always so keen, I thought, well, I may as well have professional training. It's all coming useful, you know, rather than just being a HO. And so I joined the 2nd battalion, which had come back, I believe, from St. Valery in France.
What was the full name of the unit?
It was the 2nd Battalion, Lancashire Fusiliers. And I was with them until autumn. Then I developed a pain in my right side near the appendix. And I went to see the MO. In fact, I think he thought I was swinging the lead. And he told me to come back the next day. And he tried me with temperatures, and I was well over the top of normal. And so they sent me to see a specialist at Netley Military Hospital. And this specialist jabbed me in the side and he said, probably appendicitis. They kept me in there a few days, perhaps nearly a fortnight, and then they decided to X-ray. And almost an hour after I was X-rayed, they were back and they said, you'll be going into an operation in the morning. They didn't tell me what for, but I was in bed for 3 months. And they removed an abscess. I was told it was a retroperitoneal abscess. That was what I had. And then I was shipped off to Colchester. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Winchester. Convalescent for a couple of weeks. And I remember going round Winchester Cathedral and giving a hand to wind the clock up. There were 2 or 3 of us, Canadians, and a handle for each part of the clock. And then I was whitelisted to Bury in Lancashire. That was Wellington Barracks. It's now demolished.
What does whitelisted mean?
Whitelisted when you lose your unit. You lose your unit if you're away from it for so long. And you're whitelisted back to a holding battalion. And then you're all redistributed again from there. Well, while I was there, I was looking after, well, you couldn't call it I'd be a kind of orderly, I suppose. But I was orderly to a couple of company sergeant majors and a platoon sergeant major, and the rank, of course, platoon sergeant major is now extinct, and the VC from the First War. It was merely there for decoration purposes, I think, and he served as an orderly at court-martial hearings, and I had to get him ready for court-martials. He wore the 1914 service dress all the time and putties, and it really was turned out nice. And from there, were asked for volunteers for various drafts, parachute regiment, Palestine police, things like that, all of which fell through. And then one evening when we were going out, my friend and I, Albert Johnson, he came from Peel Green, Salford, we were stopped and this young officer said, I want 50 volunteers, if I can get them, he said, to go aboard merchant ships and man guns. He said, do you fancy it? So, of course, Albert and myself said, yes, it was. Anything was better than being in Bury. So,
what was the trouble with being in Bury?
Oh, all we were doing was being shipped out to places like Manchester, moving brickwork that had been bombed, you see. And we hardly ever got out socially. We weren't allowed out. And leave was out of the question. No one got 7 days leave.
But presumably you would have been more confined if you would have been in a ship.
Ah, yes, but you were on the move. It's far nicer travelling on a ship than being fastened up in Bury Barracks. And it was winter when I was there, and we got one bucket full of coke to last us every day. And, well, it did last for about an hour. We weren't allowed to light the fire in the room until about 6 o'clock at night, and it probably lasted till seven or maybe a little later. And that was it. Then you were freezing after that. And on top of that, I needed some new boots and I couldn't get them. After Dunkirk, there were none to be had. So the thing was, you went to the cobbler, the regimental cobbler, and any size that was available that had been repaired, even if they were not your own, you used them. Anyway, I got no boots, so off I went. And we were told to write a short note to our postcard, to our relations, that they wouldn't be hearing us from us for a while, but don't tell them where we're going. And we went to South Shields first.
When would this have been?
This was 1940. In late 1940, going up to December. And one of the party volunteered to do the cooking, and we stayed one night in a railway men's club or something of the sort, and he made the rations spin out between the 50 of us, and he did what cooking was required. Then we went to North Shields. Then we were shown the Lewis gun for the first time, because we were all Bren gunners. We were infantrymen. We'd never seen the Lewis gun. It was a First War weapon. But we spent about 2 days with the naval PO, then we were shipped up to Oban, and we had a nice meal when we arrived late at night. It was very late. And
what was the idea of going up to Oban?
To join a convoy. There was a convoy laid out off at Oban, and they were needing gunners. So we were told, be ready to start off in the morning. At 5 o'clock, we'll collect you. And we were kept in the west side hotel, I think it was. I know there was a picture of a sergeant major looking at me off the sideboard or a dressing table in the bed. It must have been the landlady's husband. Anyway, 5 o'clock next morning, a naval wagon came, picked us up, and we were shoved aboard a small naval vessel, taken out to the convoy, and I started my job. And we were told we'd be 6 months on the coast, then we'd go deep sea. Well, I was shoved aboard the Linton Grange. I believe she came from the Argentine. I'm not sure, but I think she came from the Argentine, carrying beef products.
And what nationality was the crew?
They were mainly British, but there was one air subject, you know, Southern Ireland, who I became quite friendly with. In fact, he greeted us with a cup of coffee when we got off the boat onto the ship. And so we spent 6 months going, just jumping off one ship onto another, being paid wherever we could, any army unit. We were really no unit at all then. And we wore our own, mine was the Lancashire Fusiliers badge, I wore that. Some of the boys wore Scottish Regiment badges, Tam O'Shanters, anything which you were associated with in the infantry or your previous regiment.
During this 6 months, you say you were going from ship to ship.
That's right. They were all, practically, all ships coming in from abroad, and they'd take off the deep sea gunners and push us aboard, and we'd go south or north wherever they needed us. Sometimes we were on coasters. We call them weekly boats because the crew were paid weekly wages. They weren't paid like deep sea sailors. And so this went on for 6 months.
Which ports would you be putting into?
Oh, all kinds. South Bank, Middlesbrough with iron ore, things like that. Liverpool, Glasgow. I slept one night on the end of the pier at Southend, waiting for a convoy coming north. I remember that very well. And
So you were just protecting this coastal traffic, right?
For 6 months.
And during that time, were there any enemy attacks on you?
Not on me personally or our ship, but I saw it and run attacks in through the convoy, and usually it seemed to me that they always seemed to be low down, hoping that the lads would fire and hit somebody across, one of our own lot. That seemed to be the thing behind it, or to make them hold the fire. It seemed that way. But we were personally never picked out, never. I saw bombs drop on it, on round ships, and huge waves go up in the air from the blast. But actually, I never saw ships sunk by bombs.
So these were all air attacks, weren't they?
They were air attacks. But I never saw an E-boat attack, which were very, very prevalent then, until the night of the 29th of June 1940, and I'd joined the Montfallen. She was a Dutch ship, very big for the time. She was about 13 or 14,000 tons. She'd come from Australia, and the previous gunners had been disembarked for leave, and I joined it with Albert Johnson, my number two.
Wait, was this June 40 or June 40. 41?
No, June 40. I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. June 41 this was. We'd done the 6 months. It was up then because we joined in around Christmas, you know, the previous year. Anyway, it was a beautiful night when the thing happened. We were coming down off Cromer, about 6 miles out, I think. And we'd had aircraft with us, protecting us all day long. And then they left us late at night, but it still didn't get dark. It was just a sort of a gloom, that's all. You could see quite clearly for a long way. And then suddenly the skipper shouted, we had the machine gun on top of the bridge. It was the only place we could put it to get a clear field of fire. And the skipper shouted up to me, we've just received a message. There's E-boats waiting for us low down in the gloom, so keep your eyes open. Well, I was up there on my own. Albert was down below sleeping. In a few minutes, I heard a noise of engines, but I knew it wasn't E-boats. You could tell German aircraft engines, they made a whoom, whoom, whoom noise, if you understand me. I believe it had a force feed, the engine, that caused that, or so I understood. Anyway, I shouted down to the old man on the bridge. I said, shall I get Albert? He says, get him as quickly as you can. I said, well, that's an aircraft, not an E-boat. I just got Albert back up onto the gun with me, and we saw firing across the convoy. Then the aircraft engines came right round to the front of the convoy, and we were the largest ship in the convoy that night. And obviously he picked us out because he could see us quite plainly. And he came down at water level almost, flying alongside us. And he machine gunned us all the way, all down the ship, he strafed us. And then I thought nothing had happened. I thought he wasn't carrying bombs, and he got well past, and all of a sudden there was a terrific explosion and the ship heeled over, and I thought she was turning over. But it seems to me that was the type of bomb they were using was so they could make low-level attacks and they were delayed action. And I believe, or so I was told, that the water was about 200 feet deep, which made the concussion come back up and double the damage. Anyway, it flew off into the dark, and then a small naval lighter came alongside us, and she bellowed through her loud ailer, are you all right? Can you continue? And the skipper said, I think we can manage as we are now. And just at that moment, I heard this aircraft come back. And it came down the starboard side of the ship, and I could see his tracer, and my tracer, I could see hitting him, and mine were passing, they were crisscrossing, and his were a darker green than mine, and a bluish colour, I believe. Anyway, his machine gun stopped halfway down, and I think I hit his machine gunner then. But it flew past, and then all of a sudden there was a blinding flash, and I think one of these delayed action bombs had dropped on the lighter that was alongside us. And I heard screams, and there were some life rings on deck with a metal thing that turned over in the water and made a contact with the battery and lit us up. Well, the merchant seamen who were on deck immediately threw life rings over, and that marked us and finished us off, because he could see just where we were. And he came back again, and he did exactly the same attack, but this time he'd no machine gunner, so I do believe I hit him. And I could see a dull red glow. I don't think it was fire. I think it was instruments. I could see he was so close inside his cockpit, and he was flying absolutely level with the bridge. And anyway, he came down, probably down the beam about amidships, then he turned right over on his back, just missed the mainmast and dived into the sea on the other side, and that was the end of that. But then I heard six blasts on the siren, and I'd never heard it before. One was starboard, going to starboard, two to port, three astern, but six I'd never heard. It was abandoned ship. And anyway, one of the stewards with small white jacket, short white jacket shouted up, come on, get into a boat, we're abandoning ship. So, actually, there was a rumour going round in the regiment then, and it was that if you could unclip your gun and get it away, you got £5. Actually, it was a fairy story, but it gave me incentive. And I unclipped the Lewis gun, took the magazine off. Oh, and Albert said to me, just before I did that, he said, I'm going to dash down and get my paybook. He did. He disappeared, and The next thing I knew was when I got into the boat, and the boats on the starboard side had all gone, they'd just disappeared with the explosion. And when I got into the boat, I saw Albert there, and I took the gun with me, and very soon, a destroyer or a sloop, I think she was a sloop, the L-82, the Meynell, I've never forgotten the name, came close.
What was it called?
The Meynell, M-E-Y-N-E-L-L. And she came out of the gloom and she bellowed over her loudhailer, "Who are you?" And the skipper called out Montferland, and he just sounded like a German speaking broken English. So I immediately said, "Stop it, I'll spell it out, it's likely to open fire on us." So anyway, I spelled it out, and he said, the skipper of the ship bellowed, "Right, get ready to come aboard," came alongside us, and we got up on up the rope ladder. I handed over the Lewis gun, the magazine of ammunition, and we got aboard, and there was still a fight going on. There was attacks quite close to us after that, but we were shepherded below. And I saw the inside of a destroyer for the first time. They'd conveyor belts with nothing like that. And they took us into a small room at the side, a wardroom of some kind. And I remember seeing a lad on a table. He was stark naked. And I thought he was dead, of course. And they gave us chocolate, cigarettes. And I really felt sorry for this chap. 5 or 10 minutes later, while the gunfire was still going on up above, you know, it was still an air raid going on the convoy, I saw this chap come in, still stark naked, had brought him round. And in a while he told me he'd been taken down with the ship, and then the ship had let him go and he'd come up. But he was unconscious when I saw him, and I don't know if there were any more survivors. Anyway, we stayed with the convoy until morning on this HMS Meynell, and we put into Harwich. And when we got ashore, I remember seeing a long row of bodies with tarpaulins on them all along the quayside, and they were obviously all dead. And we were shepherded again into a big shed, and the little old lady came round and gave us all 5 woodbines apiece and a box of matches. And then I suddenly remembered this story about the £5 if you took your gun off. So I asked one of the sailors if there's any chance of getting back to the Meynell. He said, "Well, she's out in midstream." He said, "You may do." Well, I managed to. I got aboard this small boat. It took us out. And there was the officer of the watch at the top of the ladder. And he asked us what we wanted. And I said we'd left a Lewis gun aboard, and I'd signed for it and I wanted it back. And he showed me to the armoury. And the armourer gave me it. But he'd cleaned it, and he was a bit disgruntled about this. And anyway, I took the gun with me and I got back to shore. And they took us to, where was it now? Oh, the place where... Oh.
Felixstowe?
No, not Colchester. Winchester. Oh, no, just a minute. Winchester. They took us to Colchester, and with some items of clothing missing. So they fitted us out with these new uniforms, and they were insisted on giving us the jabs in the arm, inoculations, but I don't think we got any. And then we were given railway warrants and put on the train. And the funny part of it was we shoved the Lewis gun on the luggage rack just as it was. They'd taken out the ammunition on the Meynell, but we had an empty magazine and a Lewis gun. And we went through London carrying this Lewis gun and ammunition and magazine. And again, it went on the luggage rack, and it caused a bit of a commotion, but nobody bothered us except one military policeman. I forget the station now. But anyway, when he saw we'd no ammunition, he let us take it. And we went up to, North Shields. I think it was North Shields we went back to. I'm getting confused. Lochwinnock. I think this was my first experience of Lochwinnock. And as I said, before we left the ship, the captain told me via the mate that we were both being recommended for the Netherlands Bronze Cross, but we lost touch with the captain and everybody else on the ship. So that was that. And we went back to Lochwinnoch in Scotland.
I think you said you never actually got this medal.
We never got the medal, no. No, we never got the medal.
What, do you know what kind of German aircraft it was that you shot down?
I think it was a Heinkel. I wasn't very good, me, on aircraft recognition. I think it was a Heinkel. My mate Albert said it was, and he was better at aircraft recognition than I was. And he says it was an Heinkel. I thought it was a Dornier. But anyway, it was dark, it was night, it was midnight. Turned midnight when the ship sank.
What did you think of the calibre of the German pilot who attacked you?
Oh, yeah, good. He came, so I could have hit him with a stone. It was so close, I could have hit him with a stone. His wings were just clearing the lifeboat davits. And there was no doubt about it, it was a cool customer. But I do believe I hit his machine gunner, or gunner, on the second run. And on the third run, that was the pilot, obviously, because it went erratic, the aircraft. It turned over on its back and just flashed past the foremast. And I thought it was going to hit us, but it didn't. It went into the water on the other side. And that was that.
How difficult was it to hit a plane with the Lewis gun on a merchant ship?
Not very hard when you're using tracer, and it's so close. I mean, it was just like a hosing. It's like using a hosepipe. No problem.
Sounds almost like a suicide attack on his part.
Well, I don't know. I don't think he realised that we had any gunners aboard, because you must realise that this was early in the war, and gunnery was, it's very thin on the ground, as you might say, on merchant ships. We didn't have much at all. Some ships had 4-inch guns aft. Some were more lucky than others, but of all the ships I went on, there were an assortment of guns. Unbelievable. There were different kinds of guns, fine guns, all kinds. And some of them Dutch, some British, some German, in fact, so I heard. But anyway...
Whereabouts would your Lewis gun be located on the ship?
Above the bridge. We're above the bridge. The skipper's down below us, and the navigation, the officer was on watch, of course. And they, because of the warning we'd had from the escort, they were on the bridge, and I was above with the Lewis gun bolted down. It was bolted down. It was on a single tubular stand.
Were you completely exposed, or did
yes,
you have any cover?
Oh, no, we'd no none then, but we did eventually, during the war, get gun pits. Was it a kind of plastic armour? It was a kind of grey stuff. It was just a square box with the machine gun mounted on a stand in the middle, or the Oerlikon later in, as we got them, and that was about it. But with no cover at all on the bridge, no.
When you eventually got this cover, was it very effective?
Well, I was never machine gunned at that range before. Never again. I never was machine gunned so close, you see, because, I mean, they never attacked you after going on in the war so close. I think it was just bravado because they knew we'd practically no armament. I think that was the reason.
But did you feel safer when you got the cover?
Not really. No, not really. It didn't look very secure to me. It would look to be about... It was about, 3 inches thick, like a grey material, I believe. I don't know what they called it now. I did hear. Plastic armour of some kind, I believe they called it. But it was just a square box with a machine gun or an Oerlikon mounted on a stand in the centre. And that was about it. And if it was a Bofors, then, of course, the loader was completely exposed to machine gun fire. He was stuck up above the gun pit. It was only about, 4 feet, 4.5 feet high. No, maybe more than that. Maybe about 5 feet, I should say. It was just a square box with an entrance hole to go through. And that was it.
So I interrupted you with you saying you were going up to Lochwinnoch.
Yes.
Could you pick it up from there, please?
Yes. And we got to Lochwinnoch, and we had to go in and make an action report to Lieutenant Colonel Dunkeld. He owned the works, which were now converted into our barracks. It was a chair works.
What was Dunkeld's relationship to the DEMS?
Oh, he was our commanding officer. after that, after we were formed. You see, eventually we became known as Royal Artillery personnel, which all of us objected to, well, most of us anyway, because we preferred to keep our own infantry badges. You know, we'd had that knocked into us in the infantry that we're in the best regiment in the army, and you didn't like being told you were going into the Royal Artillery after that. Anyway, we made an action report out, and we told Lieutenant Colonel Dunkeld that we'd got the aircraft, but we sank. We told him the whole story, and that the ship's captain had told us we were being recommended for the Netherlands Bronze Cross. And he just smiled. He says, "I don't think you'll get it." And we didn't. And we got 7 days survivor's leave. Now, there were so many ships being sunk at that time that the usual 14 days survivor's leave had been reduced to 7. But it was quite decent about it. He said, "All right, how long is it since you had leave?" And it was almost 3 months. So he said, "I'll give you another 3 months and you've got your 14 days. You've lost nothing." So off we went and had 14 days leave. And then we came back and together, Albert, my mate, of course, he took the option which we were given at that time of leaving. Once you were sunk, you were given the option of leaving the outfit and returning to the army. And Albert decided to go back to the army. But he said he was going to the 5th Commando, which was somewhere near at... it was in Scotland, and it was quite near. But whether he ever did go, I don't know. I know I lost touch with him. He went. And that was it then. And I joined with a fresh gun crew. And I joined the Ulster Monarch. And apparently, she was a ship that was used for trips up to Iceland. She'd not got a long range, I believe. I think that was the reason. And we picked up RAF personnel who'd been trained in Canada and America, loaded all their gear aboard, personal baggage. Well, we didn't do it, but it was loaded aboard. And we brought them back to, I think it was Glasgow. And after that, I changed ships again. And I was shoved onto the Empress of Russia. And strangely enough, the gun team I joined at Glasgow, I think it was. I think we joined at Glasgow, and I didn't even know one of the gun team, but apparently most of them had been fairly successful in their efforts. And we set off. We did 5 days going south in the Atlantic. Oh, I should say, we loaded Canadian troops. I remember the Saskatchewan Regiment, the Princess Patricia's Light Infantry, was it, or Princess Patricia's Own, and Royal Canadian Engineers, and some foreigners, I found there were Norwegians. And we sailed. We took quite a lot of Canadian troops aboard. I think there were 2,000 or 3,000, probably. And anyway, we sailed south in mid-Atlantic. Then after about 5 days, I believe we turned round at about 5 days, and then there was a conference in the big concert room or whatever it was on the Empress of Canada, which was the ship we're on. And apparently they let the cat out of the bag then. We were going to knock Spitsbergen up, and these Canadian troops were going to do the job, and the Norwegian troops were going to take part in liberation work. And we're told that there were collieries on Spitsbergen of very high-grade coal, which was being shipped to Germany, and the people there had no option but to allow the Germans to take it. There's no way of stopping them.
Which date would this have been, do you know?
It was September 1941, I believe, when we sailed for Spitsbergen. And when we got there,